I am Plateau on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We look back at last night's Oscar telecast now, Friday on this program. We previewed the show with a look at the nominees. Now we recap the 86th Annual Academy Awards with Shannon Roop. We'll talk about what won, what lost, who should have won, how Ellen DeGeneres did, and more. Shannon Roop is a columnist at thetie.ca and appears regularly in Salon and Swerve out of Calgary. She was a contributing editor at the Georgia Strait and wrote for the Ottawa Citizen. The website for more is at shannonroop.com. I'm a big fan of her work. Also, she's on Twitter, at Shannon Roop is her handle. And if we get bored talking about the Oscars, we'll talk about Downton Abbey, a program that both of us share an affinity for. Spoiler alert, we'll talk about the show up to and including the end of season 4. So if you didn't know that Matthew Crowley is dead, perhaps listen to this later. Please welcome to the Plateau Line program Shannon Roop. Ms. Roop, good morning.
Good morning.
I figured I can mention that Matthew Crowley's dead because that's over a year ago now, right?
Well, you would think it was safe, but the way people are watching TV now is we watch, a lot of us wait for whole seasons, and sometimes we wait for a series to really be a hit. I have friends who are just hooking into Justified, which is in its fifth season, and the first three were brilliant. They're just learning about it now, partly because of Netflix.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, is I was reading on Twitter, because I guess House of Cards came out Valentine's Day, and the author Andrew Piper was asked, I think it was Andrew Piper, when people, or might have been Andrew Coyne, when people can start talking about it online. And I guess the date March 1st came up arbitrarily as the date we can start talking about that.
Well, I think that if you're somebody who hasn't watched a show, it's your responsibility to avoid the spoilers.
Yeah.
You know, I think as, you know, when you're writing, you signal people that you're going to talk about something, and it's their choice beyond that to write about it, to read about it.
Yeah, I was looking at Twitter this morning. People were saying that if they didn't watch the Oscars last night, they should have avoided Twitter or Facebook. But I guess most of us have seen the show. If we avoided it on purpose, well, that's our problem, right?
I would think so. And I mean, I can't imagine that anybody's going to PVR this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, with the Oscars, I think the big problem is for sports. I think the only time it's really a problem is things like hockey games and whatnot, if you can't watch them live.
Especially,
then you absolutely have to stay out of Twitter.
Yeah, especially like if it's tape delayed, like Sochi was.
Yes.
Yeah. So did you brave the 3.5 hours last night of the Oscar show?
No, I have a life. I can't imagine anybody watches it in full unless they're actually at a party. And even then, you're not really paying attention to it. No, I catch a lot of it via Twitter.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, that's where you get the highlights really fast, when Jennifer Lawrence, you know, tripped because she's Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
It was on a Vine on Twitter within 3 minutes of it happening. So, it's a hilarious moment. Whoever got it had a fabulous angle, because when she falls, it looks like she steps on her own dress and pulls herself down. She grabs the woman in front of her who's wearing a strapless dress, and there's this naked back, and apparently it was slick because she grabs it and she slides. It's really funny.
Yeah. I mean, I had it on, and I must admit I was doing other things while it was on for the 3.5 hours, but I pretty much stayed there. I mean, I did other things as well. I left the room a few times. But, yeah, I mean, it's just a rough night usually to have to watch it, to endure it, I guess.
Well, it's a bore. I mean, I've had to, you know, the tie 1 year we decided we'd live tweet the Oscars, I guess, shortly after Twitter arrived. It was probably around 2007 that we decided to do this. And it really was a ring of hell having to pay attention in real time. And, I mean, this wasn't the worst show ever. But, I mean, Ellen's, she's lovely, she's pleasant, but she's really not that funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, she can't sustain more than 3 hours.
Yeah, do you think, she's a departure from last year, from Seth MacFarlane, who a lot of people didn't like.
She is the anti-Seth.
Yeah.
She's nice. She knows which side her bread is buttered on.
Yeah, and so do you think in that case, that's why her material suffered, maybe, or she suffered, perhaps?
I would imagine it was a reaction to that. There was so much backlash, and it was really in bad taste. But I remember thinking at the time, it's the Oscars, and they're surprised if it's in bad taste. I mean, that's the tradition. What I was thinking last night was how 6,000 people who are really at the top of their game in terms of performing and production skills can annually put on a TV show that bad, that inept, that boring. I mean, they were, you know, fumbling and stumbling over their lines, and John Travolta got a Idina Menzel's name wrong. In fact, I saw that and I thought, oh, someone else must be singing it. How is that possible? These are actors. Presumably, they can memorize scripts.
Exactly. Yeah. Did you think the time of the award show has passed? I mean, it's probably big in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and you know, it'd be the number one show of the year. I mean, it hasn't been the number one show probably in a couple decades or so.
Well, they didn't start televising it until fairly late. I mean, the sort of big era for it's the 70s. But at that point, we're all still watching television collectively. The way in which we watch TV is substantially different than it was. I mean, in the last 50 years, by the time the 1980s come along and we've got video players, mm-hmm. nobody's watching television in real time. I mean, at that point, we're all time shifting. And then you've got all the breakouts into niche markets. And that said, they still get something like 40 million people in the U.S. So that means there's probably about, you know, probably 4 million here are watching it. But probably not the whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's lots of clips that you can get a hold of as well. As the show's happening, there's people posting clips of the highlights and whatnot, which is some of how I watched it. If I realized I'd missed something, I would do a search online and I could find what I missed.
Yeah. Were there shockers for you in terms of the winners last night?
Just Matthew McConaughey.
Really? You didn't think he'd win?
No. I assumed it was Leo DiCaprio's because he did two superb roles last year. He also did Gatsby, and while the film, you know, it picked up awards for costuming and production, it was a terrific performance. It's really the great unfilmable Gatsby. The movies are never very good because the book doesn't lend itself. Mm-hmm. But he was the best Gatsby I'd ever seen. There was a poignancy to him that is entirely in keeping with the novel and is rarely captured. I thought he was terrific, and in many ways it's sort of the flip side of the character in The Wolf of Wall Street. So I thought that he'd done two pieces of superb work, and because this is a kind of popularity contest, they're not really voting for the role, but all the other stuff going on around the role, I thought that he might get it, but I have a hunch McConaughey may have got it because True Detective is just so good.
Yeah, I saw the first episode recently, and it's a grab me, you know. It's like I can't wait to watch this, you know, and everybody loves that show, right?
A remarkable performance from him, and of course none of us thought he could act.
Yeah.
You know, it came as a great surprise. We thought he was the pretty boy in the rom-coms.
Yeah.
And that his True Detective performance is really disturbing. Rust is a disturbing character.
Yeah.
And he captures it, and he isn't in the least pretty in the role. I mean, that's the other thing that's sort of startling about it. Matthew McConaughey has suddenly become unattractive and a good actor.
Yeah, and he had a good performance, I'm told, in Mud, which came out earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it is sort of, what's the line, that the word that they're using, reconnaissance, I guess, in terms of his work this year.
That's a good term for it.
Yeah. The quality of the speeches was something that I noticed, I guess beginning with Jared Leto, through to Lupita Nyong'o. Did you catch many of the speeches last night?
I saw a few of them, and Lupita Nyong'o was lovely, just so gracious and warm. I actually thought Kate Blanchett was pretty good as well. I mean, it was a very diplomatic speech, as she thanks Woody Allen for casting her.
Yeah.
but she doesn't, you know, it was, she should consider politics. Of course, she probably does politics. She runs a theater in Sydney these days.
Mm-hmm.
She does live theater. So, yeah, she'd be good at politics.
You wrote in the Tai about about Blue Jasmine and about the recent controversy surrounding Woody Allen. You liked her performance in Blue Jasmine, Blanchett, but you didn't like the movie. Is that right?
The movie's compelling. I wouldn't say I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the tricky thing when you're. I don't like what it's saying, and I don't agree with Allen's view, which is that the woman in this case was just a woman scorned, and in many ways she was infinitely more guilty because she watched what was going on, she benefited from it, and the only point at which she turns him in is when she finds out he's leaving her for a younger woman. And so she's malicious and malevolent, she's a woman scorned. I do believe he sees the world that way. I don't think it's particularly accurate. And I don't like the way he humiliates the character unnecessarily. I mean, it's ugly. At the same time, he is so skilled. He is such a fine craftsman. It's a really compelling film, and her performance was astounding.
Yeah, and the other performances, too, in the movie that I like, I mean, Sally Hawkins was great, and Andrew Dice Clay. Surprising.
Yeah, he was surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and Sally Hawkins, I was actually... sorry, she was up against such competition for that award, because she gave a wonderful performance. In fact, Kate Blanchett, well, Blanchett actually said that.
Yeah.
She couldn't have done it without Hawkins.
So the idea that Woody Allen captures women so well in the films that he makes, you're not one to agree with that, I guess, are you?
I don't think he captures them well. I think he gives them great roles. I think there may be some confusion over what is said about him. Actresses get a chance to stretch. They get a chance to do wonderful work, and a huge number of them, I think it's five or six of them, have won Oscars in Woody Allen films. That said, I don't think that those roles reflect particularly well on women. I think he's... Well, Woody Allen's a misanthrope, but he dislikes women infinitely more than men, and you don't see it in all the films. I mean, some of his films are better. Before I wrote that piece, I actually went and looked at some of the films that I'd remembered liking, like Purple Rose of Cairo. And sure enough, she's not, the woman doesn't fare any worse than anyone else. In fact, she fares a little better. But that's not really true of most of his films. My sense is he doesn't like women. And I remember having that feeling when I was a kid myself and watching Annie Hall.
Uh-huh.
I know it's considered his great romance, but Annie Hall doesn't come off all that well in it.
Yeah. In the Tai piece that I've mentioned, you drew the parallel between Mia Farrow and, I guess, a Kate Blanchett character, which a couple of people, I guess, have brought up since the film's come out.
Yeah, I think that it's probably impossible not to see that when I was watching the film. And because I'm not much of an Allen fan, I had avoided it for months, because it came out, last July?
Mm-hmm.
But I watched it over Christmas. And it was the moment where he's talking about the husband, the criminal husband's decided to leave her for the neighbor's French au pair, so she's a teenager. And there's this speech, and as they're debating it, arguing it, I'm thinking, oh, I bet that's exactly the conversation, you know, Woody Allen and Mia Farrow had. And then we get cut to the next scene where she picks up the phone and she's calling the FBI to turn him in. I don't think you can avoid seeing Mia Farrow after you see that scene. It's that he wants us to think that.
So when the next Woody Allen movie comes out, I guess it comes out in the summer or late spring, do you think this recent episode will do anything to I don't know, keep people away from the movie theaters? I mean, his movies generally don't do... I mean, they're not blockbusters in terms of grosses, but do you think that there'll be some backlash towards him because of what's happened in recent weeks?
I don't think that that's been the case historically. I mean, not even when the scandal broke the first time. I think that a huge number of people are fans, and they rallied around. And his box office is very good. I mean, he doesn't do blockbuster films, but in terms of profit for investment, his films do very, very well. Because they're little films, they don't have high production values. He has a fabulous cast, but they often work at scale. Mm-hmm. It's such a privilege to work with him, and he writes such great roles. And, you know, he has, what, more than a dozen, I think, Academy Award nominations. So he's somebody actors want to work with. So he's very cost-effective, which is why his films continue to get made. And he has a solid audience. And there's a huge, for all the people criticizing him, there's also a huge number of fans defending him.
Yeah, yeah. Back to the Oscars and sort of the Best Picture nominees. Did you watch American Hustle? Did you like it?
I liked American Hustle very much.
Yeah, and I bring that up because Anthony Mason from CBS News tweeted late last night that of the that he liked most of the film, the nine films that were nominated for Best Picture, but that was the movie that he probably could see himself watching 10 years from now. I mean, I sort of feel the same way.
It was a good script. Yeah. I expected it to win in the script category, actually, even if it didn't pick up anywhere else. But I think it's the mathematics of the voting is the problem. It used to be five films, and it's now nine. So that changes it statistically. I mean, it's one of the interesting things about the math. If you look at the Academy itself, it's overwhelmingly male, only about 23% women. Mm-hmm. The median age is 62.
Yeah.
So that, if in the case, and there's so few good roles for women, that there is, it turns out that there's less competition and that there's a handful of actresses who get nominated over and over again and win over and over again. It's because the pool is so small. There's only so many roles and so many actresses who are eligible for them, so you tend to get lots of repeat winners. If you manage to get nominated or get into some of those fabulous films as an actress, you have a very good chance, much better than a man, of getting into the awards.
Yeah, like Amy Adams has been nominated, what?
Five times. I just read that. Five times.
And, see, I thought because she had been nominated so many times and hadn't won, that she should have won, because everyone else in the category with her last night had Oscars already. Meryl Streep has three. Her performance was good in American Hustle, but, you know, I guess it wasn't as good as Cate Blanchett's. Is this one of the instances where we can say that the performance went out instead of the politics of giving awards?
I think that's the case, although Woody Allen's screenplay was pretty good, and everyone was willing to bet there was no way he'd win that award.
Yeah.
So, I think the consensus is that politics generally win out, but Blanchett's performance is a tour de force. I actually watched the film twice.
Really?
I was so startled by it the first time that I watched it through a second time to see if, you know, had I missed something, had I misunderstood. Yeah, I mean, it's really stunning. It's a film I would take another look at. I know, because I was a dance and theater critic for years, I know an awful lot of actors, and they were all astounded by that performance. I mean, it's one of those performances other actors love.
Downton Abbey, which I mentioned that both of us like a lot, is that something that you watch more than once, like an episode more than once, say?
No. Well, yes, if I want another look at the dress.
I see.
You know, I mean, I have a friend who PVR'd the Oscars last night, but only the red carpet portion, because she wants another look at the dresses.
What is it? I mean, you've written about that at length in the TAI recently, about that show. And I'm trying to explain it to people that said, well, why do you like it? And I don't know what it is. I mean, it's you can sit in front of the TV, I guess, and you know, your mouth's open, and you don't have to think for an hour or so.
I think it's because it's such a pleasant experience. I think it's the warm bath of television.
Yeah.
It's there's something reassuring, there's something very comforting about it. It's in no way historically accurate, but it's beautiful, the beautiful sets, the beautiful clothes, the rituals, the fact that everybody seems quite happy in their place. Nobody's striving, not really. I mean, the closest we have to a striver is Edith, the middle unattractive daughter who's always unlucky in love. She's the closest thing we have to somebody who's uncomfortable in her position. Everybody else is uniformly happy and fulfilled, and there's a comforting, reassuring quality to it. And I think that's probably where people go. It's a little Downton Abbey vacation.
Yeah, and the dialogue, I mean, even though it can be cutting and sometimes rude, it's funny, and it's not, you know, unpleasant, I guess.
Oh, well, Maggie Smith delivers a zinger like no one else, but an awful lot of the dialogue is just dreadful.
Yeah.
And then there's the plots that have been recycled through multiple other shows, but Upstairs, Downstairs, I swear, the scriptwriters are just watching Upstairs, Downstairs and recycling the plots.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned in that piece in the Taille that you watched that because I guess Nora Ephron liked it, right?
That was actually what made me watch Upstairs, Downstairs. Yeah, years later I'm reading her Esquire essay about it and thinking, well, if it's good enough for Nora, it's good enough for me.
Yeah. So have you seen it all of Upstairs, Downstairs?
Have I seen all of it? I don't know. I probably binged watched a whole bunch of seasons because I would have come to it probably 10, 15 years after it aired. I would have seen it on video.
Yeah, see, after after I got into Downton Abbey, I bought the DVDs for Upstairs, Downstairs.
Did you think?
Well, I found it, I mean, it's good, but it's also, it's hard to get into, I found. And I'm still, like, in the middle of season one, or I guess I'm about three quarters of season one now. And I put it away for a few months, and I haven't gone back to it since. I mean, it's something that I will go back to eventually.
I remember being really hooked when I saw it, like hooked after two or three episodes.
Huh.
And in those days, Videomatica on 4th Avenue used to have all sorts of classic television, all the PBS stuff and all the British series. And so I remember, you know, sort of renting the whole thing through them.
Yeah. See, I've gotten into other things like Merchant Ivory, and I started watching Mr. Selfridge. I guess it's just, I'm sort of in a British phase, I guess.
I only saw one episode of Mr. Selfridge, and it didn't hook me, and I moved along. But, yeah, I'm a sucker for a costume drama.
Yeah. I guess the annoying thing about Mr. Selfridge is Jeremy Piven's voice. I mean, he just sounds like his entourage character. And I'm assuming that people didn't sound like that back in, you know, in the tens.
Yeah, that was my impression of it. It was a bit too slick and modernized.
Yeah.
As opposed to, there was another British series about the rise of a department store in the Victorian era, about the 1880s. I've forgotten the name of it.
The Paradise?
Yes, The Paradise. And it seemed a lot more accurate.
Yeah.
Despite also being a soap opera about a department store, because, of course, they're all soap operas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I guess that's why we like them. Yeah.
I think so. I'm also a fan of Nashville, which is also not especially well-written, but the music's great.
Yeah. House of Cards, are you into that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I binge-watch with everybody else when it was... when it was launched a few weeks ago.
See, that's the thing. I mean, I think I'm on episode 8 now, or I can't remember where. I'm sort of... The great thing about Netflix is you just click onto it, and it just starts up wherever, and you don't even have to worry about what number you're on. But I'm sort of in the middle now, and I'm sort of rationing them, because I figure it'll be another year before we get our next fix, so... But I guess you're one of those people that watched it all on that weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I tend to watch all television like that. I don't watch in real time.
Yeah.
I just because of just the way my life goes, I'm pressured to do, I have a lot of deadlines, So I tend to watch in fits and starts. So I don't watch in real time ever. I often wait until a series is finished. And I'll look to see what got good reviews. I'll look at the Metacritic ratings. There's, you know, some critics I trust more than others. Mm-hmm. And I will look at a series when it's done, usually.
Breaking Bad is something that you didn't get into, right?
I watched the first two or three series of Breaking Bad, the first couple of seasons, but I found it really depressing. I mean, I sound really frivolous when I get going on the costumes and the sets, but I couldn't stand being in that house. It was this dark brown 1970s Warren. It was like a little rabbit Warren where everything was claustrophobic, and I understand how that served the story, but I just couldn't stand being there. Throw in, you know, and we didn't have moral ambiguity. He was an out-and-out villain. I just didn't want to spend time with the guy.
Yeah. One more film question before we wrap up here. Was there a movie that you thought should have been nominated or should have won at the Oscars last night that didn't?
No, I don't think I saw anything last year. The Coen Brothers. I wasn't crazy about the last Coen Brothers, and that's
Inside Llewellyn Davis.
Yeah, that was the only thing that I thought was missing. But no, I didn't think there was anything that needed to be seen. I thought it was a remarkably good year for films. I guess it was two or three years ago I actually wrote a piece about how bad movies have become.
Yeah. And it's funny how television has also improved in recent years, too.
Well, a writer I know at The Globe actually made an argument to the contrary. She
really?
Said that there's a few gems, because we're all talking about this being a golden age of television and whatnot. She talked about there being a few gems and overwhelming ocean of crap. She doesn't think TV is consistently better. She thinks there's a couple of elite shows. And she's a pretty smart critic. I was kind of persuaded by that.
Yeah.
But I'm not somebody who wants to watch a lot of television. I want to watch the good shows,
yeah,
and actually a couple of bad shows. I have a weakness for... Yeah, because, I mean, Downton Abbey, as much as we love it, we have to admit, those scripts are not good.
Yeah.
So I've got a weakness for shows like that. Nashville has the same problem. The story's told well in the music, but the scripts, oh dear, those poor actors. You see somebody with Connie Britton's talent just fighting against the bad writing, which can be fun to watch as well. But I don't want to watch a whole lot of television. A handful of good shows coming out in short amounts, things like True Detective, it's 8 episodes, Justified is 12. Those kind of short bursts suit me really well. That's how I want to watch television, and in discrete periods. I don't want to watch a series that extends over 22 weeks spread out over a year.
Yeah. Well, where are you on Girls? Do you think that's a good show?
I watched, I guess, the first two seasons, but I'd seen more than enough. I think she's really talented.
Yeah.
I think she's, and I think she's less an actress, and what that is performance art, is what it looks like to me. And some of it is some pretty sharp social criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's funny. She's got a nice comic sense, but I've seen enough to know what she's doing, and it doesn't interest me enough to actually want to spend time there.
Yeah, there's one episode this current season where they go to a beach house, and I think Marsha Lederman in the Globe said that it was pitch perfect. It was Neil Simon good, you know, and I've seen it now twice, and I think, you know, she's right.
Well, I may take a look at the third season at some point, but it would be if I was down. I had a knee injury in the fall. I watched a lot of television. I got caught up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always, my TV watching often coincides with an injury.
Shannon, this has whizzed by, and I've really enjoyed talking to you today. You're really good to do this. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for asking me.
The websites for more, shannonrupp.com, thetaii.ca. Shannon Rupp joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.